Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. One of the most recognizable arpeggios in the history of music, the opening line to Chuck Berry's Johnny Be Good, now rocketing past our solar system on the Voyager spacecraft, possibly bringing the very human sound of guitar for the first time to extraterrestrial ears.
Way back up in the woods among the evergreens, there stood a log cabin made of earth and wood, where lived a country boy named Johnny Be Good, who never ever learned to read or write so well, but he could play a guitar just like a ring in a bell. Go, go!
I'm Glenn Moberg. The guitar has carved out a sonic landscape in our culture, and it's not just the music that is an art form. The instruments themselves rise to that level, as we shall see in the next hour. Today on Route 51, we examine a first-of-its-kind exhibit at the Lee Aucke Woodson Art Museum in Wausau. Medieval to Metal, the Art and Evolution of the Guitar. 40 iconic instruments from medieval ouds to the archtops of the 20th century, to the resonators and dobros that sculpted the sound of blues and bluegrass, to the Telecasters, Les Pauls, and Rickenbacker 12 strings that created rock and roll and country music. Our guest today on Route 51, Kathy Kelsey Foley, director of the Woodson Art Museum. H.P. Harvey Newquist, executive director of the National Guitar Museum and creator of the exhibit. Luthier and singer-songwriter John Currier of Stevens Point, who's hosting guitar-building workshops for the exhibit and who will be performing live in our Wisconsin Public Radio studios. And later in the program, you'll hear from bluesman Bobby Misano, who will be performing at the Woodson tonight, Thursday night, and Saturday night for the Blues Cafe event at the Rothschild Pavilion. Now, as always, we welcome your phone calls if you'd like to join the conversation. If you'd seen the exhibit or if you've got a special guitar that meant something to you, give us a phone call. Our lines are wide open at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I'll read it live on the air. Well, I have been looking forward to this exhibit for months now, and I've been looking forward to this show for weeks. Kathy, John, and Harvey, thanks so much for being with us today.
Well, Glenn, thank you. It's really a treat. We've been looking forward to it as well, and it has exceeded our expectations, and we have many weeks to go.
Has there ever been an exhibit like this at an art museum before?
Harvey, what do you think?
You know, there have been a variety of art museum spectacles where they've assembled guitars for a very brief period of time, but not an exhibition that set out to really look at how the instrument has both evolved from a design perspective and also how it's affected the culture.
Exactly. And I just love the fact that we can look at this object that adored, played, collected by so many. 3 million new guitars sold every year, Harvey, you've told me?
Yes, they're more sold every year than all other instruments combined.
And then all those who have lovingly collected and preserved their guitar, and we can look at them for not only their visual aesthetic, but also for the music that they create.
And Kathy, this is truly a multifaceted exhibit at the Woodson Art Museum and interactive. You've got the 40 iconic guitars, you've got guitar building workshops, musicians demonstrating different styles of guitar playing, a sound stage where guitarists can jam, and kids have a chance to create their own album covers.
That's right, and their own stage in Art Park.
I have never heard of anything like this at an art museum before.
And don't forget our app, Glenn, where you can download to your smartphone or tablet, but also use for audio tours. So today in museums, the goal really is to provide as many access points and entry points as you can. So for the person who learns by doing, that soundstage is critical. For the person who needs to listen or watch the video as well, or the audio tour, those are all the ways they can make the connections with the guitars on view.
And it's free.
Admission to the Woodson Art Museum is always free. That makes us immensely accessible.
And that webpage, let's get that out right now.
www.lywammuseum.org.
L-Y-W-A-M
Dot org.
John Currier, you've been involved in this project in two ways, as a luthier and a performer. You were at the Woodson, in fact, this past weekend, performing with bluesman Otis McClellan.
McClellan, Otis. Yeah. And John Kaler, a bass player and luthier himself. We had a wonderful time.
Also doing guitar building workshops. Tell us about that.
I was given the opportunity to be an artist in residence, and I gave a lecture on the difference between building a Baroque style guitar versus a modern day guitar, and walked people through the evolution of that design process. Did a seminar on the luthier craft and met with a number of classes of young people, and we played with guitars.
What was really terrific, I have to jump in and say, was on Thursday evening, after John talked about building the Baroque guitar and the 21st century guitar, and then John and Michael Kadurka played their the respective instruments, Michael playing the Baroque recreated guitar, playing Green Sleeves. It actually made my eyes fill with tears. One, because the music is so sweet, but also the difference, the audible difference in the instruments, in the sound, in the quality, the style. Is that the right way to say it?
There was a difference in style. Michael played in a 17th-century
style.
And I tried to do a more recent style. He's going to be playing that same instrument in weeks to come as well.
And guitars sound different depending on the woods that are used in the construction of them.
And sure, and the difference between a Baroque guitar and today's was huge.
John, tell us about your guitar shop briefly, and again, if people want to find out more, your website is CourierGuitars.com, correct?
That's correct, yeah. I work out of my home. I build and repair guitars. In a good year, I might build as many as a dozen guitars. Usually it's fewer than that. Build on commission.
And H.P. Newquist, you are the guy who put this traveling art and evolution of the guitar exhibit together. Why did you choose the Woodson as the first art museum in the world to feature it?
You know, the story goes back several years. As part of the National Guitar Museum, we launched an exhibit back in 2011 that was primarily historical and scientific in terms of its mission. And we got a call from Andy McGivern, who's head of exhibits over at the Woodson, who said, you know, if you ever decide to do one that's focused on the art of the guitar and is maybe a little bit more transportable, because our other one is this sort of huge 5,000-6,000 square foot exhibition, he said, give me a call. And in the intervening years, we started getting a lot of interest in stripping down that first exhibit into something more palatable to art museums and design centers. And in the middle of last year, our board of advisors said, well, let's do that. And where should we launch it? And I said, well, why don't we call the guy from the Woodson who came up with the idea? So we called Andy and decided that the Woodson would be a perfect place to launch the new exhibit.
And again, you've got 40 iconic guitars going all the way back to a guitar-like instrument that was played in medieval times, going back even before that, the oud, a Middle Eastern instrument. Tell us a little bit about that instrument, Harvey.
Well, the oud is really the precursor to all strummed, stringed instruments. It was invented in the Middle East back at least 5,000 years ago, probably further. It was the first instrument to have a neck where you could fret the strings. It had anywhere from 8 to 18 strings. And it was created using barrel staves in a sort of a gourd-like pattern for the bowl. And when that was taken by the Moors to Europe, it evolved into the lute.
And the oud doesn't have any frets, so you can get all of those microtones, those Middle Eastern tones. There are more tones in Middle Eastern music than the 8-note octave scale in Western music.
That's very true. Both the Middle East and Asia have microtones that we don't use in Western music, and because there are no frets, as you point out, the player could slide their fingers into places that frets don't allow you to slide them. and give you that kind of human wailing voice sound that's so familiar from that style of music.
Well, let's fast forward now to the late 20th century and modern era guitars like the Stratocaster and the Les Paul. Here is Les Paul, who really revolutionized jazz guitar with his Les Paul model in the 50s and then the rock music of the 60s. And he's performing here with Chet Atkins, whose Country Gentleman guitar also changed the sound of country music in Nashville. And Harvey, you can hear Les Paul with a lot of reverberation on the guitar. He was really into the sound of the instrument and different effects. And the Les Paul guitar really did revolutionize what we think of as the electric guitar.
Well, it did. You know, one of the misconceptions, however, is that Les didn't invent the Les Paul guitar. Les had invented a form of electric guitar that he played in the mid-40s. It was basically a 4x4, a piece of wood that he called the log, which wasn't appreciated by Gibson in terms of its aesthetics. So they passed. And about 10 years later, when they decided to compete with the Fender Telecaster, they created their own guitar and called Les back and asked him if he'd be willing to put his name on their new guitar.
But he had the idea that you could actually create a guitar out of a solid block of wood.
He did, and actually we have... We have a guitar that even predates Les's interest. Les wanted to use it for jazz, but going back to Hawaiian music, which was actually the most popular form of music from World War I to World War II, there was a guy named George Beauchamp who created a solid-body electric guitar out of metal, which was the first mass-produced electric guitar called the frying pan. It was produced by Rickenbacker, and that was sold in the early 1930s.
And you've got a couple of instruments also on display that change the sound of two genres, blues and bluegrass, the resonator and the dobro. Here's bluesman Roy Rogers playing a resonator guitar. Those instruments were created initially to make the unamplified guitar loud enough to play on stage or in a band.
True. As a matter of fact, the history of the guitar is really all about making it louder. As John was saying earlier, there's a big difference between the Baroque guitar, which was played several hundred years ago, usually in small parlor settings or small concert settings, to modern guitars, which are meant to be played on stages and in front of lots of people. And the resonator guitar is the last step before the first electric guitar. It was made oftentimes completely out of metal, but had an inverted speaker cone in it so that it would project sound outwards, allowing players to hear themselves over the drummer or the keyboard player or even the singers.
And there's a shared history between the National Steel Guitar Resonator and the largely wooden dobro, which is so popular with bluegrass bands.
They're essentially two versions of the same instrument. They were both created by George Beauchamp, who was the man who created the first electric guitar, and John Dapiera, who was he and his brothers, the Dobros, created the initial resonator. And the two groups had falling out. The Piera brothers and Beauchamp decided to go their separate ways because Beauchamp wanted an even louder instrument and went towards electricity. And the Dobros went towards creating their own line of resonator guitars that we refer to as Dobros.
Now, you've also got on display a Vox teardrop guitar, which was played by Brian Jones of the Rolling Stones.
It was made famous by Brian Jones. The original prototype of that guitar was given to Brian, who saw that it was completely different than anything he'd seen before. It looked kind of like a giant teardrop or a giant guitar pick. And it instantly made him stand out from the crowd of people that were using Stratocasters and Rickenbackers and Telecasters.
And speaking of Rickenbackers, the 12-string guitar, the dominant instrument in the folk rock music of the 60s, like this cut by the Byrds. Harvey Newquist, what are the beautiful design qualities you see in the Rickenbacker 12-string, which is still the preferred 12-string for electric musicians?
It's really quite interesting because it hasn't changed at all since the early 60s. It's still the same color, which is fire glow red. It had a very European design, which none of the American guitars like the Les Paul or the Stratocaster had. There were some fine bevels in it, some interesting curves that we don't find on any other instruments before or since. And I think that that look, along with that sound, which you're hearing with the Byrds, really cemented what the Rickenbacker 12-string could be and the sounds that it could produce.
And you've also got a number of unusual and some very usual guitars on display. You've got a cheap Tysco guitar, which was the first electric guitar for a lot of kids.
Yeah, Tysco at one time was a perfect example of what we used to call in the 60s and 70s of a product that was made in Japan. And back then, made in Japan, for all of us, was something made very cheaply and was cheap to buy. Today, certainly, made in Japan means something that's oftentimes out of our price range. But back then, Japanese instruments flooded the market at prices of $40, $50, where Fender and Gibson were selling things at two and three times that much. So kids were picking them up at Sears, at Montgomery Ward, you know, at their local music store, and getting their first chance to play a real electric guitar that way.
And there's a part of the exhibit with a, well, it's about the cheapest guitar I think you've got in the exhibit, one with a Zen-like quality to it, the Air guitar, and a display case that's completely empty.
You know, we have an infinite number of Air guitars, and I believe that the Woodson is giving free ones out to everybody who comes to the exhibit.
Absolutely.
But, you know, the Air guitar is interesting in that it really is something that almost everyone, whether consciously or unconsciously, has played at some point when they're hearing either their favorite song or some incredibly loud song. And you know, the design element of the Air guitar is anything you want it to be. So it's pretty much the all-purpose guitar, and that's why we included it in the exhibit.
Harvey, we've got to run. Thanks so much for sharing your expertise on these beautiful instruments that, again, are on display at the always free Lee Aucke Woodson Art Museum up on the hill on 12th Street and beautiful Wausau's east side. Did I do that right, Kathy?
Perfect. Perfect.
And Harvey, it's nationalguitarmuseum.com if people want to find out more about what you're doing.
It is. For this exhibit, we always point them to the Woodson's website, but for more on us, you can find nationalguitarmuseum.com, yes.
And Facebook, both the National Guitar Museum Facebook page and the Woodson Art Museum Facebook page. We've really been lighting both of those up, I think, Harvey.
Yeah, actually, I love living it from afar, even though I'm not in Wisconsin right now. I'm enjoying following all the activity.
Well, Harvey, you're on the airwaves in Wisconsin. Thanks so much for being with us. We're going to take a short break now. There's much more ahead. You'll be hearing from bluesman Bobby Misano later in the show. Bobby is performing at the Woodson Museum tonight and the Woodson Art Museum tonight and on Saturday night at the Rothschild Pavilion for the Blues Cafe event. When we come back, John Currier and I are going to play a couple of songs for you live in our Wisconsin Public Radio studios. Heading into that break, here's one of the great flat-picking bluegrass guitarists of all time, Doc Watson.
Let's do a little country counterpoint now, son.
Supporters of Wisconsin Public Radio include Peninsula Players, Ganchert Nursery, and Marshfield Clinic, proud supporters of WPR programs. Your business can join our ever-growing list of contributors. More information at wpr.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Northwind Renewable Energy of Stevens Point, designing and installing solar systems, highly efficient wood boiler systems, and providing deep energy retrofits to buildings. Northwind's project portfolio is available at northwindre.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. We are back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Our subject today, the art and evolution of the guitar. It's a new exhibit at the Woodson Art Museum. If you just joined us, we just heard from H.P. Harvey Newquist, who created the exhibit. We've got Kathy Kelsey Foley with us. She is the director of the Woodson Art Museum. And John Currier, who is a luthier who's done guitar building workshops, also a singer-songwriter, and he and I are going to play a couple of tunes for you right now live in our Wisconsin Public Radio studios. John, you're playing one of your handmade guitars. Tell us a little bit about it.
At the Woodson Art Museum, This guitar is actually on some photos down where I was teaching the classes. It's made of zebra wood. I brought it because I thought it'd look pretty on the radio. Kind of a mid-sized finger-style guitar.
And we're going to play one of your own compositions called I'm an Old, Old Man. Tell us about that.
It's a novelty song. I was able to sing it for some of the younger kids that came through the workshops that I was doing. I'm an old, old man. I've got wrinkles and spots on my hands. I'm an old, old man, but that doesn't matter to me. I've grown past my prime. My knees are creaky and my teeth aren't mine. I've grown past my prime, but that doesn't matter to me. I've been around since way back when. I tell the same stories again and again and again and again. I'm a ripe old age, but I don't care. I've got me a woman with blue-gray hair. I'm an old.
Career. And we've been working on a song together. It's a beautiful old cowboy song by Riders in the Sky. It's called The Arms of My Love.
Cowboy who rode through her heart. Dusty trails lead me on, and I'll never roam, never more from the arms of my love. She wait by the firelight, right through the long night? Does she dream of the cowboy who rode through her heart? Dusty trails lead me on, and I'll never roam, never more from the arms.
John Currier, singer-songwriter, luthier.
That was fun, thanks.
Live in our Wisconsin Public Radio studios. And if you did just join us, we're talking about the new exhibit at the Woodson Art Museum of Wausau, The Art and Evolution of the Guitar, with John Currier and Kathy Kelsey Foley of the Woodson Art Museum. I'm Glenn Moberg. When we come back, you'll hear my interview and some music from blues guitarist Bobby Masano, who will be at the Woodson Art Museum tonight and this Saturday night at the Blues Cafe at the Rothschild Pavilion. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Supporters of Wisconsin Public Radio include Chippewa Valley Cultural Association, Lee Yawkey Woodson Art Museum, and the Wisconsin Youth Symphony Orchestras. Your business can join our ever-growing list of contributors. Go to WPR.org/sponsor.
You're listening to a performance by blues guitarist Bobby Masano, who played guitar with Steve Winwood of Traffic, Blind Faith, and the Spencer Davis Band. He's performed as a session guitar player for numerous musicians over the years, and he is working on a new CD titled Love and Money. He is performing tonight at the Lee Yawkey Woodson Art Museum as part of their new exhibit, The Art and Evolution of the Guitar. And he'll be at the Rothschild Pavilion Saturday night for the Blues Cafe event sponsored by the Great Northern Blues Society. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guests on Route 51 today are Kathy Kelsey Foley of the Woodson Art Museum, luthier and singer-songwriter John Currier. Earlier in the show, we heard from exhibit creator and the executive director of the National Guitar Museum, H.P. Harvey Newquist. And we will be back with John and Kathy in just a bit. But first, here's my interview with Bobby Masano.
It's a great exhibit. It looks wonderful. I can't wait to go through it. So I'll probably be playing some acoustic and some electric, and I think we're going to be doing a question and answer kind of thing also. So it should be a really interesting kind of really interesting evening.
You're also going to be appearing Saturday night at the Rothschild Pavilion for the Blues Cafe event. What can people expect there?
Well, that's going to be the full out assault of contemporary blues that I do. I think we're probably going to do a couple of songs. We're previewing a few songs from the new CD, Love and Money, that's coming out next month. And I have a great band. I mean, it's really a great band. We're doing a three-piece, and, you know, it's really going to be fun. I think, actually, Glenn, you've actually seen us also, so it should be a fun show similar to what you saw.
Yeah, I saw you here in December at the UW Marathon County campus when you performed for the Blues in the Schools event.
Schools, correct.
Is that something you like to do a lot, trying to sort of pass along the art to a new generation of young people?
Yeah, I've done it quite a bit. I've probably done 15 Blues in the Schools, and I mean, I've always felt that it's very important to keep moving the art form forward, And I also, for me, it's also really important that people that are moving the art form forward move it in the direction of writing about your life, you know, as opposed to somebody, well, you know, or writing your own songs in the genre. So I think it's really important to do that. And yeah, otherwise, you know, the genre would disappear.
What does it say about the staying power of the blues? The art form is more than 100 years old now, if you go all the way back to the roots in Delta blues and Dixieland jazz.
Absolutely. You know, it's probably one of the most important, you know, music art forms out there, I believe. I mean, it was the basis, certainly the basis for all the rock and roll stuff. And I'm a big Robert Johnson fan. I thought he was a fabulous writer, and Willie Dixon and stuff. But, I mean, for me, it's so important to write your story into the genre itself as you move it forward, you know.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get interested in the blues? What was the first thing that really turned you on?
Well, I mean, when I was a kid, I started playing, oh, do I have to say it? I guess I will. I started playing guitar 50 years ago. And, you know, I was like everyone else. I listened to the Beatles and then I started hearing Freddie King songs and it freaked me out because I thought he was so great. You know, I definitely got where blues was coming from, and I got where the soul of the blues and the one single note that can move 10,000 people came from.
What was your first guitar?
Somebody just asked me that the other day. That's really funny. Actually, first electric or first acoustic?
Well, give me both of them.
Okay, the first one was a hand-me-down from my brother. It was a Sears acoustic guitar, and the strings were like 50 feet off the neck. And it was very difficult to play, but he didn't want to play it, and I decided that I would learn how to play it. And then as I kept playing, my first electric guitar was a Tysco Del Rey, actually.
Believe it or not, there is a Tysco guitar at the Art of the Guitar exhibit.
Is there really?
Yeah, and it's got more buttons and knobs and switches on it than you've ever seen in your life.
I know. It was a really cool guitar. I had a Tysco Del Rey, and then I had a Zenon. And then my first sort of real guitar was a Hagstrom 1, and then I finally got a Fender Telecaster, which truthfully I wish I had now because I could buy a car with it.
You know, there are 40 different instruments on display at this exhibit, from ancient ouds and Baroque instruments to resonators and dobros used for blues and bluegrass, and then there are the iconic electric instruments like the one you mentioned, the Fender Telecaster, the Gibson Les Paul, the Rickenbacker 12-string, the Vox Teardrop, and then there are other electric instruments that are one-of-a-kind rarities. What is it about the guitar that has given it such staying power to the point where it is really the dominant instrument in popular music?
My take on it is that I think it's actually a voice. I mean, it's a lyrical voice, like singing. There are only a couple of instruments to me that can do that, and that can do it well. And I think that the guitar can come across the same way that a vocalist can, you know, reciting or singing a lyric.
Well, the guitar is really, you know, an analog instrument. You can get different sounds with your picking technique and how you use vibrato and bends with your left hand. You could have three different blues musicians play the same series of notes. Let's say B.B. King, Albert King, and Eric Clapton. Mm-hmm. And you could tell who was who just because all three of those passages would sound different, even if they were the same notes.
Absolutely. You know, it gives you your own identity by playing strings. And I was going to say, just to add as an aside, one of the coolest things for me, and I grew up in northern New Jersey, but and this goes to Wisconsin, Les Paul lived about 35 miles from where I grew up.
Yep, the Wizard of Waukesha.
Well, actually, in Mahwah, New Jersey, when he moved here.
Okay.
And one of the rite of passages of, like, a New Jersey hotshot guitar player was to go hang out with Les Paul. I got to see the log, you know, firsthand, but it was sitting at his house, you know.
And the log is this prototype of the electric guitar that he made, which was really nothing more than a block of wood with pickups on it.
It was actually magnets, and yeah, it was like, and I walked in the door for the first time. He had a screen door that walked into this little vestibule, and there was the log on a table, and I went, oh my God, it's the log. And he went, yeah, of course it is.
Well, Bobby, let's listen to a cut off of one of your recent CDs.
Even though it's not real, it's a peaceful spot that we own. Deltaville, even though it's a dream, why don't you come along and see what I mean?
Welcome to Deltaville. That was actually written as an ode to this little town that I fell in love with in Virginia that I had never heard of before. I just happened to be driving by it, and I said, I love the name Deltaville. I must name a CD after that. And then I drove into the town and saw that they had a sign called Welcome to Deltaville, and now I do a show there every Memorial Day weekend outside on the water for the town, and the whole town sings Welcome to Deltaville with me, and it's really fun, but it's a song that wanted, was supposed to make you feel like you were going home, and that's the way that town is.
You're working on a new CD, as you mentioned. Tell us about that.
Well, the new CD is actually, I think it's my best yet. I've written some of my best songs ever. And it's a very dark album, but it's not a poor, poor, pitiful me dark album. 9 of the 10 songs are mine. One cover tune, I do Had to Cry Today, the Blind Faith song, because I always try to do a Steve Winwood or a Jimi Hendrix song, because I played with Steve Winwood as his guitarist, and I saw Jimi Hendrix, and it had a formidable change in my life. The CD is called Love and Money. It'll be at my shows after April 15th.
All right, Bobby, thank you so much. We're really looking forward to seeing you tonight at the Lee Aukey Woodson Art Museum, and then Saturday night at the Rothschild Pavilion for the Blues Cafe event. Bobby Masano, thanks so much for spending some time with us today.
Oh, Glenn, thanks so much. I'm so glad I could do this, and we'll see you this week.
Well, we'll see him tonight at the Woodson Art Museum. I'm Glenn Mobrick. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. If you just joined us, that's Bobby Masano, blues guitar man extraordinaire, who will be showing us techniques of the blues guitar, doing questions and answers at the Lee Aukey Woodson Art Museum as part of their Art and Evolution of the Guitar exhibit. And he will be performing this Saturday night at the Blues Cafe. It's an event that takes place every year about this time at the Rothschild Pavilion. Kathy, Kelsey, Foley, how did you line up all of these incredible artists to perform?
Glenn, really, the credit is due to the great Woodson Art Museum staff. You know, we love what we do. I hope our passion shows every day and with every visit. When we come together to plan and brainstorm, sometimes we say, hey, let's keep it to a dull roar. And when we do that, when we say that, it seems as though our programs grow even larger, more expansive. Mm-hmm. In our quest to really touch everyone with something meaningful, we know no bounds. We're always looking, searching. And for Medieval to Metal, our curators and educators comprised a fantastic community partnership committee. You were part of that, Glenn.
We've been working on this for months.
We have been working on this for a very long time. And I think the credit is due to those partners working with Katie Anderson, Jaina Hintz, Andy McGivern, Jane Weinke, Amy Beck, and pulling together something that did offer a variety of entry points.
John Currier, just in general terms, what do you think of the exhibit?
Oh, it's eye candy for a guitar player. I mean, it's a wonderful exhibit. I've had the best time. I've been through it a number of times, and I'm going to be through it again and go to the programming. I was a great example, I think, of someone who needed to learn what the Woodson Art Museum does, because my connection with the museum prior to this was the Birds and Art program, where I performed in October, and that's when I was first contacted by Katie about this exhibit, and I have come to learn how broad the effort is, from education to performance, to the exhibit itself. It's
I heard you nodding your head. Saw you nodding your head as Bobby Messana was performing some of his music. He's a singer songwriter. You're a singer songwriter. What did you think of it?
Oh, it was wonderful. It's wonderful. I can't wait to see him.
And you know, just relative to John's involvement, we would be remiss not to mention the National Endowment for the Arts, because the Woodson Art Museum did receive a competitive, very competitive, and very sought after Challenge America grant to support John's residency and the recreation of Luthier's studio at the museum and the work with students. So, you know, it takes the creative ideas, the connections. It also takes support, and our community has been intensely generous, from the Department of Tourism to UMR to Baird, to public radio, our media sponsor, Midwest Communications, hotel partners. I mean, it takes a lot of participation.
And the most amazing thing is it's free.
Yes, the museum's commitment to free admission is something that we are enormously proud of.
Well, I'm going to put the phone number out again. We've got just a few minutes, about 6 minutes more of the show, and it's been jam-packed up until this time. We really haven't had any time for phone calls, and I know it's late in the day, but if somebody does want to get through and talk about their favorite guitar, or if they've seen the Art of the Guitar exhibit and want to comment on it, or if they've got comments about the Woodson Museum, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. We can squeeze you in if you call right now.
And those comments, Facebook, another great opportunity to share your guitar experiences through our website in the Sound Lab at the Woodson Art Museum. We have a note your experience comment board. So again, we're looking to engage with our visitors. We want to hear their feedback. And then of course there is the collector day when we do invite the community to bring in their guitars. It is by calling and signing up. There are some parameters, but a wonderful opportunity to tell your own stories about your cherished guitar, much like Bobby did.
There you go. There you go. John, I wonder if you have any perspective as somebody who actually makes guitars to the different philosophy and different attitudes different guitar makers have had for the instrument. You see some of these guitar makers really stressing the classical designs and the original wood construction. And then you've got a guy like Leo Fender who, with his Telecasters and his Stratocasters, was so into the car culture of the 1950s that he actually spray-painted his guitars with auto paint that came right off the automotive assembly line.
That's the best. I love that story. That's great.
He didn't even change the names.
I know. I know. It's exactly the same.
It's like, oh, you want a Sea Green or a Mist Green guitar?
I wonder how many people bought those guitars and said, I'm going to get a matching car.
And you could have a matching appliance as well.
Oh, right? My gosh.
Seafoam green.
Yeah, the builders do so many wonderful things, ranging from the look of the guitar to the sound of the guitar. And I'm still sort of agog at the whole exhibit.
And those old instruments, the ones going back into the 1800s
and earlier.
You know, those are, of course, models, reconstructions, yeah. Because there aren't many, if any, of those instruments still around. Wood only lasts so long under most circumstances. It doesn't last long at all if you've got a guitar player.
I think they have some reproductions in the exhibit, but I think of the historic
Renaissance.
Yeah, I think the oldest, the Gold Clang, I think, is the oldest guitar from the 1890s, as I recall.
They've got a reconstruction of something that, from way back in the Middle Ages, and I can't even remember the name of it, that big
the
thing.
Really, yes.
The Theorbo. Yeah. The Theorbo. It's about 6 feet tall. Mm-hmm. It's very light. Weighs about 4 pounds.
And again, Kathy, this is really interactive and multifaceted. If you've got kids, they can design their own album covers.
Correct.
If you've got kids who are a little bit older, they can plug into them the Marshall amplifier that you've got set up. First time I've seen that in an art Museum and show their stuff.
That's right. And a number of great programs that bring together music and art making and different techniques through which you listen to music and allow your hand to replicate, your drawing hand to replicate the rhythms you hear. And because really when we talk about art, about two-dimensional art, we use many of the same words and descriptors that we use when we talk about music in terms of quality and tone and style and shape and form. So bringing together the sister arts is another important element of medieval to metal.
And every Thursday night, it's a different guitar player, a different style. You've got Rico Jaeger, who is just a great rock and roll guitar player.
Right?
You've seen him at the Wausau West Pop concert.
Correct.
And Tom McComb, great jazz guitarist working with the Wausau Conservatory, will be there.
And the UWMC students doing their part as well. And Jeff Sandbaum, the shredder. I only know about shredding my important papers. but it's every Thursday night during March and April. And then the exhibition remains on view through May 31st.
I have been playing guitar since I was 16 years old. I'm 62 now. And I gave up trying to shred because I can't do it, you know.
John, you're not much of a shredder, it's not my style. Huh?
Well, I think Jeff's going to show us that.
There we go.
So something for everybody.
Exactly.
And how do your colleagues in the art world view the kind of eclectic approach the Woodson Art Museum takes toward art?
We have a lot of respect, get a lot of respect, and I think a lot of curiosity about how we do it and, replication. It's the highest form of flattery is seeing our programs copied by our colleagues. That's a lovely thing. And, of course, the funding support, especially the National Endowment for the Arts, is a tremendous vote of confidence in the quality of our programs. Really, the highest form of flattery.
Well, we are out of time, and I've saved the best for last. Here's some Andre Segovia playing a composition by Bach. I want to thank today's guest, Kathy Kelsey Foley, director of the Lee Aucke Woodson Art Museum of Wausau, H.P. Harvey Newquist, the creator of the Art and the Evolution of the Guitar exhibit, and the executive director of the National Guitar Museum, luthier and singer-songwriter John Currier of Stevens Point, bluesman Bobby Misano. A reminder, Bobby is performing tonight, Thursday night, at the Woodson Art Museum. He performs with his full band this Saturday night at the Blues Cafe at the Rothschild Pavilion. You can find out more about the Woodson and the guitar exhibit at lywam.org. You can also find out more about the National Guitar Museum at nationalguitarmuseum.com. And you can find out more about John Currier's handcrafted guitars at currierguitars.com. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ricker. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by John Currier, Bobby Misano, Chuck Berry, Al Hassan, Les Paul and Chet Atkins, Roy Rogers, The Byrds, Doc Watson, and Andre Segovia. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town.